number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Peter King will join us at the bottom of this hour. I wasn't sure of the exact time earlier, but will join us at the bottom of the hour. One other quick NFL note, by the way. The domestic violence charges have been dropped against Reuben Foster. Foster is the player, you will remember, got cut after the domestic violence charges were filed. Washington picked him up on waivers just days after his arrest.
And Doug Williams had a great press conference where he said, hey, compared to other stuff, this is small potatoes.
He still may be suspended by the league, by the way.
Yeah, right.
But is sometimes the case in domestic violence situations. Sometimes there is not cooperation from the victim.
That happened with him before, with the same woman.
And the charges have been dropped.
So, who knows?
So, now the question becomes, you know, will the league do something? I have a feeling
they'll do something, probably.
So, at the same, this is small potatoes for a lot of things out there.
Thanks, Doug.
Always a fine report, Doug. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I bet. My prediction is he gets suspended like six games and he plays next year.
That's a good bet, I think, on your part. I am now, by the way, convinced that the Boston Bruins will never have an entire roster available.
Not possible.
Them. This entire season, they will not have everybody available for one single game.
And then someone's going to ruin it.
The game when Chara and DeBrusque and Miller all came back.
You're like, who are these
guys? And all
of
a sudden, out of the blue, they said, oh, yeah, by the way, Charlie McAvoy can't play.
Right.
And, you know, McAvoy, I don't know if he's close or not, whatever the reason.
I bet he's going to be delayed in his return.
And now the question becomes, you know, now Nordstrom's out with a non-displaced fracture of his fibula. They will never have an entirely healthy roster this entire season.
Not possible. At least they'll be used to it, because a couple years ago in the playoffs, they couldn't have had less guys available to them. So if that happens again, at least they'll be prepared for it.
So all of that stuff, you know, is out there as well. And Peter King at the bottom of the hour. Let's get back to the calls with you at 617-779-7937. John's in Springfield. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's going on?
Full disclosure, I'm a 54-year-old black man. I was born in Boston, lived there most of my life. I live out in Springfield now. And I think the problem that's going on is not in the NFL. It kind of mirrors the problem in Boston itself, where the qualified people aren't able to get through the old boy college system. And that's where the issue is. And so you got these players that want to go into coaching, but they're not getting those same jobs that the same, you know, likely qualified white people are getting in the college level. And that's why you don't see those same type of coaches coming through the college level and getting promoted into the NFL and then getting promoted to head coaching jobs. And I think that's where the issue is. So that last caller who says, oh, the NFL, you know, got all the black players and, you know, there's no problem in the NFL with that. I agree with that. But I think the problem is in the college system, and that's where you still have that basest racism that's the qualified people aren't able to get through.
I think it's like 10%, right? Division I college football, there's like 129, 130 teams. And I believe last check, and I'm sure this has been updated, I'm sure coaches have been hired or fired, there was like 12 or 13 black head coaches, which is pretty
that
insane.
Number doesn't seem quite right, does
no,
it?
No, it doesn't. That number is insane. But it's not just head coaches. You know, to John's point, it is qualified coaches. So you look at the list of NFL head coaches right now, how many of them were college head coaches? Not many. Like, that's small. It doesn't mean you have to be a college head coach. But if you do look at where they began, a lot of them might have been in college for a couple of years and were, you know, clearly wanted to go to the NFL and then ended up being a position coach there, or, you know, eventually a coordinator, and then you become, you know, a real true candidate to be an NFL head coach. There's not maybe as much college to pro overlap, though, right? As in some of the other sports?
You could also look at it as a lot of these, you know, the black athletes aren't, you know, recruited for the same reasons. You know, a lot of them, and I have a friend who was recruited into football, and, you know, basically, he just got the free ride. He didn't have to do all the academics and everything that everybody else did. So I think that could be a problem as well with a lot of these players that, you know, they're natural athletes. And you know, but they don't have that same education that they should get as athletes.
Well, I think even less than that, because you certainly don't need to be a Rhodes Scholar to be an NFL head coach. You just have to be really smart football-wise. Like, you just need to be...
Just have to be really good at that.
But you have to be really committed to it. And I just wonder, when you're talking about former players and the money that they make, and then now, all right, you're not a player anymore, you'll still make good money. I mean, especially the top head coaches make good money, but some of these coordinators and even some of these assistant coaches, you know, compared to you or me out there, that's a ton of money. But for these former players that go from making $5, $6, $7 million a year, then they're like, wait a minute, I got to spend how much time and I get paid what? Like, you know what? That's just not for me. So you're not always going to see as many former players say, this is how I'm going to want to spend the next 15, 20 years of my life.
Mike's in Framingham. Hey, Mike.
Hey, you know, you got to talk about Josh McDaniels, about how it'd be hard for him to get a job.
Yes, sir.
Because he might not commit.
Right.
The thing is, with the Colts, though, he never signed the contract.
Oh, come on, though. You're gonna fall back on the, you know,
Mike,
he didn't sign. It's okay.
Yeah, so he's allowed to leave, but he proved that he's not a man of his word. His word means nothing.
I forget the sport, I forget the team, but the same thing happened in reverse. They were ready to hire a coach, and then some big-name guy became available. And it happens both ways, too. You're going to tell me if somebody was ready to hire...
Goes to the Cubs, and I think they still paid Rick Renteria. They hired him, and then Theo was like, oh, wait a minute, Joe Madden's available. And then he went out and got Joe Madden.
Mike,
but that's different.
You know that Josh McDaniels hired assistant coaches and signed them to contracts.
Right, so they signed before he signed, but he proved that you can't trust his word. That's even worse.
My point is, suppose Josh McDaniels is about to sign it, Austin Belichick became available. You're going to tell me they're not going to jump and take Belichick?
So you don't think Josh McDaniels did anything wrong?
No.
Oh, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. You can't trust him. You can't trust a word Josh McDaniels says after what happened last year. Okay, so what's verbal agreements for? Nothing? I guess if you're someone who's not trustworthy, I guess for you, nothing. I wouldn't trust a word you said because you obviously believe in what he did.
I wouldn't trust you. I would make
Why? I've never gone back on my word.
I don't know that.
I'm telling you that I haven't. And there's no find an example of me going back on my word. Find one.
You know what?
I can find one with McDaniels. It's actually really easy. It was just last year.
Come on.
No, what do you mean, come on? Come on what?
If it's two buddies doing something, that's one thing. If it's a business transaction.
I don't care if it's buddies or business transaction. It doesn't matter. If your word means nothing, that says a lot about you. That's all I'm saying. You and Josh McDaniels together. What?
I trust no one. I'm signing a contract. The coach says it's the same thing.
Well,
that is the worst argument, Mike.
If you actually say to an employer, I'll take the job.
I'm taking the job.
I'll take the job. In fact, here's the assistant coaches I want you to hire, too.
Yeah.
We're in. We're good. We're all set. You wouldn't feel bad when he suddenly said, you know what? I changed my mind.
If I'm the employer, I'm going to make him sign a contract. I don't know why that's such a big deal.
I mean, I guess you thought you could trust the guy that you were committing to and giving him millions of dollars. You thought you could trust him, and turns out you can't. So I don't know why the next team would think that they could. Why would any other team believe that he was going to commit to them?
You have him sign the contract, then he can't leave.
Yeah. Okay.
Listen, you're right. Technically, legally,
no, he didn't do anything illegal.
He had every right.
Yeah.
To screw the Indianapolis Colts, which is what he did.
It was like in Jerry Maguire when Cush's dad gave Jerry Maguire his word that he was going to go with him, and he said it's stronger than oak, and then he signed with Bob Sugar. He never signed anything with Jerry Maguire.
Exactly the thought I had.
He never signed with Jerry Maguire, and he said, and Jerry knew it. Jerry could sense it. He's like, hey, we really want to get this on paper. He's like, nah. Let's do this later. He's like, I really would like it on paper. He's like, no, I'm giving you my word. My word is stronger than oak, which some say is the strongest tree in the world.
More than teak?
Yes.
You don't know.
I have no idea. I have no clue. But this is very reminiscent. And I didn't trust Cush's dad at the time. And I certainly don't trust Josh McDaniels either. But I know it was that Mike. I know Mike he'd be best buds with Josh McDaniels. They could lie to each other all the time. They say, hey, I'm going to do this. Just kidding. I'm not. Because I didn't sign anything. That's a nice way to go through life.
That's probably not so.
I have a correction.
Oh, good.
Are you correcting me?
Yeah.
Then I don't want to hear it
in the world.
Maybe save it for another time.
No, I think now.
I will do it right now. The giant sequoia is the strongest tree in the world.
Okay, I thought you were going to correct my Jerry Maguire facts, which I was going to lose my mind. The tree facts, fine. The tree facts.
Nailed Jerry Maguire.
Okay, good.
Tree.
Giant sequoia.
Not so much on the tree thing.
Where does oak rank? Get back to me on that if you could.
There are rankings.
Just so I know. Well, yeah, because then Cush's dad might be telling the truth. He's like, my word is as strong as balsa wood. And you're like, oh, wait.
Well,
hold on a second.
Good.
Not very strong at all, sir.
Fifth.
Oak is fifth?
Oak is fifth.
So in the power rankings, it's top five. Top five trees is pretty good.
All right, so give us the top five.
Maple.
Well, I see for strongest.
Uh-huh.
The strongest.
That's what I'm talking about. Strongest trees.
So the list I have is birch, cherry, mahogany, maple, oak.
No, that's a different list than Lucy's
list.
Not
you the
guys
same as
need
Lucy.
To figure it out back there.
You two need to get this act together.
It is the giant sequoia. They call it the General Sherman. It's that.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. What about a redwood? I've always been led to believe they're just maybe the tallest tree. A redwood's nothing to sneeze
not
at.
Not on the top 10 on this fancy list I got.
The cherry tree can't be that strong, Rossi, because I've heard of people chopping those down. No problem. Something to look into, though.
It's the wood from the tree is the strongest.
Oak. You're talking about oak?
Oak is number five. Not moving there. Birch is their number one.
If you're referring to oak. Okay.
If you're going to build a fort, let's say.
Let's say I was going to hypothetically build a tree fort.
You want birch wood.
I want birch.
Birch
wood. Oh, I got a couple of birches back here.
Want me to blow your mind here?
Yeah, I do, Dale.
I have a list here. The 10 hardest woods in the world.
Well, I have a joke there, but I'm going to leave it.
Number one is the Australian buloki.
I have no idea. Okay.
I'm just telling you.
Yep.
I've never heard of it. Number two, I've never heard of. Number three, I've never heard of. Number four, I'm waiting to get to this one. Oh, snakewood.
Snakewood?
Brazilian olive wood, Brazilian ebony. Oak isn't in the top 10.
No. So it turns out his word really was.
A lot of lists about strong wood.
And let me. Yes, Jason. And let me tell you this.
Jason,
all three of you guys are looking at different lists. So I still don't know what's what.
So you're still going with
I'm going with Kush's dad.
It works. 617-779-7937. We'll get back to your calls in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk to Peter King as well. Sports Radio, WEEI.
Rocking the midday with Dale Arnold.
What the bleep is wrong with you people?
And Rich Keefe.
I'm talking when I'm talking.
What you say, who you say
it to. On WEEI.
It is time for our regular weekly conversation with Peter King. Football Night in America. Peter joining us right now. Good morning, Peter. How are you? Hello, Peter.
Dale, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Hey, same to you. How's it going?
It's going great, thanks. Were you a little surprised to see eight coaches get the gate at the end by the time the season ended?
Well, Adam Gase surprised me a little bit because I thought that Miami was only going to make a change if Coach X was available. And I thought Coach X for them was John Harbaugh. And I would not be surprised to see the Dolphins slow play this process because I don't think they're in love with any of the candidates out there right now. And I think they do really like John Harbaugh. So it's very interesting what's going on in Baltimore right now. The Ravens are acting like, and maybe rightfully so, that all is well. And I don't mean this is Kevin Bacon in Animal House, all is well. I mean that they are acting like John Harbaugh's definitely our coach next year. But I just have this suspicion that if they can't reach some sort of extension at the end of this year, you know, through at least 2020, I think Harbaugh would not have that big a problem with being a lame duck next year because being a free agent in the coaching ranks is a pretty lucrative opportunity. And nobody's ever done it before, really. Nobody's ever voluntarily done that. So, I just think, I'm not saying there will be drama in Baltimore. I'm just saying there could be drama in Baltimore.
Out of the eight jobs that are available, which in your mind is the best and which is the worst?
Cleveland's the best. Cincinnati's the worst. Cleveland has the most talent. They've got a good young quarterback. And even though who wouldn't sign up tomorrow for 4 years with Aaron Rodgers? I think the talent gap between Cleveland and Green Bay is significant. And so I think they're the best. As far as the worst, I mean, you know, look, as I wrote my column this week, I had one football person tell me a few years ago that Cincinnati basically was the 33rd franchise. And, you know, that's just the way it's always been. They have a very family-oriented way of doing business. And, you know, the fact that Marvin Lewis was on the job for 16 years and never won a playoff game should tell you everything you need to know about the way they do business there. And, again, you know, Marvin Lewis had some good years, and I think overall he didn't do a failing job. He just didn't do a great job, but year after year they stuck with him.
Why are they even considering Hugh Jackson? Or at least that's the reports that are out there.
Because Mike Brown does not care what you think or I think or what anybody thinks. He doesn't care. He knows Hugh Jackson. He likes Hugh Jackson. He knows Vance Joseph not as well, because he was only there, I think, 2 years as the secondary coach. And he likes Vance Joseph, too. I would not be surprised at all if this is either Vance Joseph getting the job and Hugh Jackson being offensive coordinator, or Hugh getting the job and Vance Joseph being defensive coordinator. Neither of those things would surprise me.
Should Mike Tomlin get credit for keeping the ship afloat with the issues with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, or should he take some blame for the dysfunction within that organization?
That's the question of the century. That's such a good question. And, you know, I think overall, I think mostly, and I mean mostly, he deserves credit. But he certainly deserves some blame for being, over the years, an enabler of a guy like Antonio Brown. And, I mean, to me, I think the Antonio Brown story, even though Mike Tomlin obviously didn't let him play on Sunday, so that's a good thing, I mean, how good is it really? What coach in his right mind would have let Antonio Brown play after he went AWOL for 2 or 3 days? He didn't return the coach's phone call. I mean, you know, and the coach's text. It's insane, Dale. It's insane. So my feeling is, without any question, Antonio Brown, you know, I don't know whether he's played his last game in Pittsburgh, but in my opinion, he should have played his last game in Pittsburgh. And I think Mike Tomlin has to think about drawing a more bold-faced line in the sand. I'm mixing metaphors horribly there. But I think he needs to be a more disciplined coach and not let his players get away with some of the things they get away with.
If the Steelers end up trading Antonio Brown, what do you think they could get back in a trade?
Well, you know, I think the really interesting specter of this, Rich, is if you look at the Oakland Raiders with 4 number one picks in the next 2 years, 3 of them this year, and 2 of them down in the 20s, where theoretically it might not be a bad match. You know, it might not be a bad thing to, if you're the Raiders and if you think that this guy is a classic Raider, we can take care of him, we can handle it. You know, if you think that, then I think the Raiders are the best possibility. Now, do I think that he's definitely, that's a good possibility? No, I don't, because I don't think the Steelers have decided with certainty whether to trade him yet. But I did note yesterday, far and away, the most respected guy on that beat who covers the Steelers and has covered them forever is a guy named Ed Bouchette. And he works for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Ed wrote a scenario yesterday that made it very possible, and in fact, he thought the best idea was to trade him, that he should have played his last game as a Steeler. And I'm just saying, Ed Bouchette has a very, very good sense of which way the wind is blowing in that organization. And I believe that when a guy like Ed Bouchette writes that, it's not written without some possibility that internally that's what they're thinking of doing.
Peter, in your opinion, is the Rooney Rule a valuable tool or a bad joke?
Well, I think if you have 5 coaches dismissed in 1 year, and, you know, basically, or if you have 5 African-American coaches dismissed in 1 year, it's a valid question. But I guess I would look at it this way. The only one who was dismissed that I find particularly objectionable is Steve Wilks in Arizona. This was a team with in a clear rebuild, and this is a team that was going to be playing a rookie quarterback most, if not all, of the year, and they were a bad team. So what? Big surprise. That's the one that bothers me. None of the other ones really surprise me or bother me particularly. Hugh Jackson, not at all. Marvin Lewis, not at all. Vance Joseph, I mean, he had 2 years, and I just don't think he was a very good game coach, and he couldn't get them out of tailspins. So I guess I would say, Dale, that it's hard to force people to hire somebody who they don't want to hire. And I'll be looking to see who not only gets interviews this year, but whether the NFL starts to replenish what they have made a huge priority. If they can replenish the number of black coaches in the NFL.
The Patriots in the divisional round will face either the Texans, Chargers, or Ravens. Which matchup do you think would be the best for the Patriots?
I think Houston. I think the Ravens are a very, very difficult match for anybody right now because they got a quarterback who's running the ball 15 times a game very effectively. They've got a team that's running the ball 65% of the time over the last 7 games. I mean, it's unheard of. It hasn't happened in our lifetime, basically. It didn't even happen with big running teams like the Packers of the 60s. But anyway, I guess I would look at it and say that I think Houston is most vulnerable at a really, really important spot, and that is the offensive line. You know, they're getting their quarterback killed. And so to me, I would, even though that is a really, really excellent front, defensive front, I think you'd be able to make hay rushing Deshaun Watson. And plus, I mean, they played each other about 100 times in the last 3 or 4 years. Though I'm sure the Patriots know everything about the Texans.
Peter, we always appreciate the time. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. See ya.
See ya.
Thanks, Peter.
Peter King, Football Night in America, joining us as he does every Thursday. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. We get back to your calls coming up next. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Take Dale and Keefe with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app. Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
We'll get right back to the calls here in just a moment at 617-779-7937. Evidently, it's baby season, huh?
Is it really?
It seems
to
be.
Who else you got?
So David Krejci was not at the morning skate today, leading everybody to think, uh-oh.
Well, it's funny.
Joakim Nordstrom got hurt. Now Krejci's not there. McAvoy wasn't at the skate. Well, McAvoy's not playing. Nordstrom's got a broken fibula. David Krejci's wife gave birth this morning.
Congratulations.
To a brand new bouncing baby. I don't know, boy or girl. And he will play tonight.
It's funny because when they tweeted out the morning rushes for the Bruins on their Twitter account, David Backes was the center on the second line.
With parentheses.
Yeah, and you're like, what does that mean? And then obviously James Devlin yesterday missed practice for the Patriots. So did Devin McCourty, by the way, who's dealing with a concussion.
Right.
So that's one to keep an eye on.
And good thing there's a bye week in there, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's similar to Gronk last year. Remember, in between the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, he had a concussion, and if they had to play the next week, he wouldn't have played. So, I mean, very, very similar to McCourty.
David Krejci and his wife, Naomi, welcomed a healthy baby boy this morning.
Well, very nice.
So that's why he wasn't at practice. He will play tonight. They won't have Nordstrom. They won't have McAvoy, but everybody else available for tonight's game. I think this is the 41st game, if I remember right. So
you're on the halfway point.
All right. After tonight's game. I believe that's where they are in the schedule. So we wanted to get that in. One other quick note. David Pastrnak was named an All-Star, as you heard during the award-winning Trending Now.
Thank you, Dale.
A few moments ago, Patrice Bergeron is a candidate for what they're calling the Final Four. They've got a list of candidates in each of the divisions.
They call it the Last Man In.
Yeah, I know. Whatever they call it.
It's an awful title. That's like me in high school, like Last Man In.
That's atrocious title.
So they have this thing where fans can vote.
Yeah.
They list a bunch of players.
He shouldn't
Patrice
be in there.
Bergeron is one of the nominees for the last man in the Atlantic Division. He shouldn't be there. He should not be an All-Star
this
year.
No, he shouldn't be.
And there is no bigger Patrice Bergeron fan than me.
True.
He missed 16 games.
Right.
Brayden Point from Tampa Bay, who's also on that list,
should be
has been lights out in the first half of the season. I mean, I love me some Patrice Bergeron, but Brayden Point should be the last man in from the Atlantic Division.
But come on. And you look at the division, because the way they do the All-Star games is it's by division, or the rosters anyway. And the Atlantic Division, the forwards are loaded. Eichel, Kucherov, Matthews, Pastrnak, Stamkos, Tavares. Like, where do you go? So, like, Brayden Point is having an unbelievable season. He probably will get in. He'll be the third Tampa Bay Lightning on there. But it just shows you how deep that is. That's better than any other division.
Part of the problem is the NHL's insistence that there has to be an all-star from every team represented, which I don't like.
I don't like that either, especially with this format. Well, either format. It doesn't really make sense to do it. Like, if you look at, you're already doing kind of screwy rosters because of the way that it's set up. You don't need to have every team represented. But at least Pastrnak's not one of those guys. Pastrnak's not there because a Bruin has to be there, at least. Like, he's a deserving all-star.
Now, we always talk about when it comes to, like, Hall of Fame, like, how many All-Stars? Now, doesn't that dilute it even more if you know some of these guys were forced into the All-Star game?
Based on, it has
to be a representation from each team?
Sure. I mean, in baseball specifically, like, there was many years where, like, Scott Cooper is an All-Star. It's like, well, yeah, he had to be. Like, they needed somebody.
We didn't have any choice, so had to have somebody.
Hockey's also one where you don't really look at All-Star as much because they do the All-Star team, whatever they call it, at the end of the year. And, like, that's much more important. Plus, actual All-Star games between Olympics and strike shortened seasons and lockouts, they don't really have a lot of All-Star games, it feels like. Like, there are a lot of guys that if they just never had the Olympics or never had those lockouts, they might be 10-time All-Stars, but instead they're 6-time All-Stars or whatever. So I don't even think a lot of people look at that for hockey.
I love Patrice Bergeron. I don't think he should be the last man in as voted by the fans.
Yeah, I don't think he
will
be.
Now, Boston hockey fans are pretty adamant about voting for their guys. I wouldn't be surprised if they rush the ballot box here.
Also dumb, too, where I think for this ballot, they put one guy from every team on that ballot, too.
Right.
They're like, okay, that's a little lame. But, I mean, that also goes to show you with this team, you know, we talked about the Patriots and the Pro Bowl, and not that anybody's going to watch the Pro Bowl or care about the Pro Bowl, but just the number of players they had going. They have two, and we both think they really only deserved one. Which is crazy, and they're still a team.
And they'll only have one.
Well, yeah.
Even assuming they're not in the,
but I'm just saying
they're not in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, who cares?
Brady's not going.
No, but that's fine. But I'm just saying, as far as what they were named, it speaks to the amount of talent you have on your roster.
Sure.
And yet they're still two wins away, potential two home games away from going to the Super Bowl. For the Bruins, they really only have one All-Star player, right?
Got no issues with that guy.
I mean, Marchand,
he absolutely should be. He's got 50 points.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Like, who's the next guy? Bergeron, if he was healthy,
would
sure,
be the next guy.
But yeah, they really don't have another guy that's even in the mix for an All-Star appearance.
All right, back to the call. 617-779-7937. Bob's in New Hampshire. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob. Bobby.
Let's try Nathan in Connecticut. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great.
Hey, Nathan.
I wanted to talk about that guy called earlier that was talking about the black coaches, and he was saying how it's unfair that there's none, pretty much.
Do us all a favor and turn your radio down, because that's messing you up.
And then, what are you saying? Just forget about the last car. What are you saying? Dale, I think we may have to move on there. I don't know if he was ready to go. That's all right.
A New Year's resolution, Keith.
Oh, I have one, too.
We need to blow more people up this year.
Oh, come on.
We need to blow more people up.
I like that.
No,
that's a strong take from Dale.
No. This is a friendly place. We want to encourage people to call in, share their thoughts.
We want to encourage them. Yes. We just want them to bring something.
And be ready to go. Be ready to go. That's an important thing. All right.
I like blowing people up.
Yep, so does Rossi. He's ready to go.
Let's be honest. There's only two buttons that he really knows.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
No.
That's the other one.
Always ready.
Somehow, some way.
You notice we can call for something and he can't find it, but he can always find the thing that we don't want him to play.
What else you got? Half the time, don't even play it. Beck and call.
I find it disconcerting that often I'm not sure you're actually listening to us.
There's a lot going on back there, Dale. He's got a lot of things to do.
I only got two ears, you know.
Well, maybe one of them could be focused on us.
It's my left ear.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
All right, fine.
As long as there's
fair
something.
Enough. Good.
We'll go with that.
Yep.
Joe's in Everett. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Happy New Year, guys. Thank you.
You too.
And Jesus loves you all. And thank I you. Have one request before I make my comment. If you blow me up, please be gentle.
Fair enough. That's on Rossi. That's on Rossi.
That's an oxymoron.
I think talking about it, though, kind of leads in that direction. But go ahead.
Okay. I want to chime in on the Josh McDaniels conversation. I actually think that amongst owners in the NFL, his credibility has probably increased because he was loyal to the Patriots. The Colts got what they deserved. They cheated,
what?
Too, and they ratted the Patriots out for cheating.
I don't think other owners around the league look at that.
May I finish my point?
Sure,
please?
Sure.
Do you think the Patriots like him? Do you think the Patriots trust him? They do, because he was loyal to them, because they treated him fairly. If you treat him fairly, he's going to be loyal to you. He's proven that through his actions. He put his reputation on the line for doing the right thing. The Colts deserve what they got.
They got a coach that got into the playoffs. They got Frank Wright. I'm sure they're thrilled with what they got.
The Colts got what they deserved.
Was that gentle enough for you?
Joe, what are you talking about? He goes, so let me ask you this, Joe. I know you're not there because Rossi did the right thing and sent you on your way. But do you really think around the league, the other 30 owners outside of Indianapolis and New England, do you think they hate the Colts more than the Patriots?
No, they probably like the Colts.
They were probably so mad when McDaniels went back. They were just like, what are they doing? They get to keep their offensive coordinator. They jerked around the Colts. The Colts didn't get to hire their guy. Think about, they had to wait till the Super Bowl was over. Like, new coaches had already signed with their teams. They'd already started, you know, preparation for the draft and everything else. They had to wait till after, because they did the interview process during the playoffs. Then they finally, or they were hoping to make it official after the Super Bowl. So you're talking like mid-February. Then, oh, by the way, you got to restart your coaching hunt. Like, that was terrible. And nobody even views, every team cheats. Every single team cheats. There's a great website, yourteamcheats.com or whatever the hell it is.
Oh, it's great. And I don't know if it's still existing.
And they all do.
But-
and so the Colts got what they deserved. Yeah, they're probably thrilled that they got a Frank Wright, who seems like a pretty good head coach.
By the way, I don't much like the Indianapolis Colts either. I think they've got an idiot for an owner.
We hate them.
We hate them.
That's
fine. Yeah. They've got a dope for an owner, that's fine.
Right.
They didn't deserve to have a coach say yes, take the job, hire some assistant coaches.
No, I don't.
They signed contracts, got ready to move their families, and
I
think I'm out.
The rivalry is back on. Colts, Pats. Colts, Pats. It could be AFC Championship game. That'd be a nice little storyline, right?
It would be here.
Josh, it would be here, and
I'd
the Patriots would win,
yeah.
So that would be good, too. But that would be a pretty interesting little storyline. Josh McDaniels, at that point, you know, probably already had an interview, or he would have already had an interview, at least one, and talking about the team that he could have been on. Like that'd be a nice, juicy little storyline.
Let's go to Harris in Roxbury. Hey, Harris.
Hey, Happy New Year to you guys.
Thank you.
You too.
The Josh McDaniels point is actually something that makes my point that I want to make more relevant. When it comes to the African-American coaches and quarterbacks also, I think the problem is that if they get the opportunities as white coaches do, they get the same opportunities. The problem is when they fail, they generally go back to being coordinators. They don't become retreads. And for black quarterbacks, when they fail, they just go back to being backups or become out of the league. Whereas white quarterbacks, when they fail, generally they get opportunity after opportunity, like Sam Bradford, Jay Cutler, and quarterbacks like that.
Mark Sanchez.
If you're a white coach and you fail, it seems like you become more of a retread. And if you look at Josh McDaniels as a perfect example, what he did to the Colts, I mean, if you're not a New England fan, was pretty, messed up. And he also failed as an offensive coordinator in St. Louis.
Right.
And he's being looked at as, a popular coaching candidate. If he was an African-American, he did those exact same things, he probably wouldn't be in the league right now.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, there's certainly a lot fewer examples, only because there are fewer black coaches. But Jim Caldwell was a retread coach, and he's getting interviews again. What would that be? His third job. Hugh Jackson, Denny Green coached, he coached a couple of different teams. So I don't know. And the quarterbacks, I mean, Tyrod Taylor was the starter for the Browns this year after the Bills got rid of him, and then he lost his job to Baker Mayfield. The Redskins brought back Josh Johnson. So there are some examples of both.
Well, Tyrod Taylor, that's another great example. Like, he was, you know, the quarterback of Buffalo last year, you know, leading him into the playoffs, and then what happened, he got benched for Peterman, and it was actually, like, some rumblings that, you know, it was kind of like, you know, what's going on there? And then, you know.
I'm saying for this year, they moved on from him, and then they knew they were going to draft a guy. They drafted a guy really high.
True. True, but I just think overall, like, I think there's a lot more pressure for African-American coaches knowing that if I don't succeed, I know this is it.
But I got to be honest with you, Harris. Just the examples this year kind of fly in the face of your point. I mean, the fact that Cincinnati's even talking to Hugh Jackson boggles my mind.
Jackson's getting another chance.
You know,
or might. He might get another chance. It seems like he's just going to be interviewed.
Might get another chance. And also the Cincinnati.
It is Cincinnati. Well, it is Cincinnati. That's fair.
Peter didn't exactly hesitate on what's the worst possible job out there. He said Cincinnati.
It absolutely is. It is Cincinnati for sure. I mean, look at the eight spots that are available. You got two in the AFC East, and both of those franchises have just gone through coach after coach after coach, and not coincidentally, also quarterback after quarterback after quarterback. That's usually how it goes. But yeah, Cincinnati. It's amazing because they had some good years, and by good years I mean good regular seasons under Marvin Lewis. Right, never won a playoff game, but they at least got to the playoffs, and they had some decent years. But now they are, and it's really not even that close.
Now, I don't think Marvin Lewis is going to get an interview for a head coaching job this year. I don't believe
he could use a year off. He's been there for like 30 years. Take a break.
Been there for a long time, and I don't think he was a very good coach.
But how about what Peter said? It almost knocked me out of my chair when he said Cincinnati could bring in a Hugh Jackson-Vance Joseph combo. Like, what are you doing to your fan base? Why would you bring those guys in?
Basically thumbing your noses at them,
like, aren't you? Browns, not only did the Browns not want Hugh Jackson anymore, as soon as he left, they turned into like a wagon and they started winning all these games. Vance Joseph just got blown out of Denver, and you're like, we want both of these
Baker
guys.
Baker Mayfield, like, making gestures at him.
If Hugh Jackson goes to Cincinnati, Baker Mayfield and the rest of he's not even alone. How about when Demarius Randall handed him the ball after he picked off a pass? Like, that whole team, they're going to smoke the Bengals every time they play them the next several years.
617-779-7937. Nathan's in Connecticut. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, I'm right here.
What's up? Go ahead.
I lost you guys last time, but...
That's all right.
Yes, you did.
I wanted to talk about the African-American coaching.
Okay, go ahead.
I agree with most of what that guy said, but...
Oh, Rossi, come on. I disagree with that one. I wanted to see where that was going.
Did you?
I did.
Really?
I did. Yes. Yes.
Executive decision.
I thought that was mean. Let the record show. I sometimes have a small, cold, black heart, but
yeah,
that scenario,
you're the bastion of goodness and light on this program.
I was trying to be nice. I wanted to hear where he was going. I wanted it to be a little bit quicker, but not... I wasn't going to hang up on him. But anyway, continue.
I think we're probably good.
I disagreed with that.
By the way, in a few minutes, what I really want to get to is next on the docket here.
Yes.
So I want to talk about Antonio Brown.
I love Antonio Brown. I tried appeasing to Antonio Brown last night on Twitter. I tried to see if he would perhaps retweet it or like it or do something in order to... I was trying to get in his good graces. So last night, Dale, I tweeted, if Antonio Brown played his entire career with Tom Brady... he'd be considered better than Jerry Rice. And I even put in at AB84.
Even Antonio Brown said, come on now.
You don't think so?
No.
I really believe it. I'm not just saying that.
Oh, you were totally sucking up to Antonio Brown.
Well, I was doing that. That is definitely true. And if he comes to the Patriots, I'd like to be the first interview. But I believe it.
Yeah, but there's no way he would have lasted this long.
I don't agree with that.
Contracts.
The
Patriots don't give contracts that he signed.
But for a guy that good, they would have. If they drafted him, they would have had him cheap for 4 years. Especially he was drafted in, what, the sixth round? Just like Brady, by the way. Right away, they're sixth round buddies.
They'd have been pals.
They have that going for them. You'd have him super cheap for a while. Then you do. Now, you're right. Belichick probably wouldn't have given him the money that he wanted. But let's just play along. It's already a hypothetical anyway.
He wouldn't have given him.
If he look at the numbers he put up with Roethlisberger. And Roethlisberger's not a stiff. He's not a terrible quarterback. But Brady, we know, is a lot better. Also, how many Super Bowls would Brady have won with Brown? Like, that's one of the things that's great about Jerry Rice. Not only does he have every single record of all time, and he's unbelievable, but he also has a lot of Super Bowl moments, playoff moments. Antonio Brown wasn't on the last Super Bowl winning team. He was a rookie on the team that lost in the Super Bowl, right. But he never won any Super Bowls. So if you put him in four, let's just say four Super Bowls, maybe more, but in four Super Bowls, they win three of them, and he's maybe a Super Bowl MVP in there, plus the stats that he has with Roethlisberger, I think they go up a little bit with the Patriots. I think you would be looking at him better than Jerry Rice.
I think that's ridiculous.
Okay.
Right. He's really good.
I think he's one of the best all time.
He'd be even better if he was playing with Tom Brady.
Yes.
Ben Roethlisberger.
That's my point.
Clearly, I don't disagree with any of that. But the idea that he would surpass some people would say not just the greatest wide receiver in the history of the game. Some would say the greatest player in the history of the game.
That's fine.
I have a hard time picturing. I don't think he's that good. He's really good.
Incredible. This is such a new. I know you don't.
Don't want him.
This is such a new wave of wide receivers where there's so many really, really good ones. DeAndre Hopkins is incredible. Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, Michael Thomas, Tyreek Hill. Go down the list. There's all these amazing receivers. And for the last 6 years, he's been the best one. Like, that's incredible. Like, you're not just doing that against stiffs or, oh, it's you and a handful of other guys. No, this is a great era in wide receivers, and he's the best one.
I do not believe that Bill Belichick would even consider trying to acquire him.
I don't believe Pittsburgh would trade him.
But beyond that, I don't think Bill Belichick wants him.
Well, that's a mistake.
Money-wise, he obviously doesn't want him.
I mean, it's ridiculous
the amount of money that he's going to get. And I think it's too much.
He did want Randy Moss. There were some baggage there.
Money wasn't anywhere close to what this
is. No, the money wasn't. No, you're right. But as far as the person and the player, there were questions there. I was so thrilled when they got Randy Moss. I couldn't have been happier. Maybe my happiest day as a sports fan was when you wake up. Wasn't it the second day of the draft? And like the Patriots just traded some crap pick for Randy Moss. It was like unbelievable. Like Christmas came early.
Who was the guy earlier today? The baseball player you said was your favorite player of all time.
Gary Sheffield. He's my favorite baseball player.
It's like what's you just want guys wearing black hats.
Maybe fine. I love those guys.
Out of his shoes.
Oh, God, he would just murder the ball, and then he would hit it to Mars. The guy was great. But, no, Antonio Brown, I think Rossi has a good point. Like, the shelf life, could he have made it here the whole time? Because even Randy Moss, and it's funny, because Brady and Belichick both speak so highly of Randy Moss, but let's not forget how it ended. It was not pretty here.
Not good.
That last year here in New England was, or half a year, whatever it was not great.
617-779-7937. We'll flesh out this whole Antonio Brown thing. He had a very busy night last night. I don't know if you heard.
He's a busy guy.
We'll talk about that as well. He still hasn't done the...
When are we getting the James Harrison exclusive
Instagram
one-on-one
video thing?
We'll have an update when we come back.
Yes.
Oh, good, that's good. Coming up next. Dale and Keith, Sports Radio, WEEI.